In Gauteng and the Western Cape, this is Classic Business.
Well, many high net worth South Africans with offshore assets make use of offshore companies or trusts or other entities to house those assets in what have been deemed to be tax havens. They are just very efficient offshore jurisdictions, and they're likely to now offer perhaps less attractive benefits to those who make use of these vehicles. I was reading an article today written by Martin Kenny, who writes for the BVI Beacon. He's an offshore fiduciary specialist, and he reckons that the European Union's blacklisting threat against smaller territories is undemocratic and brutal. It also reveals a fundamental misunderstanding of what Virgin Islands companies do. Well, he's talking about the so-called EU economic substance requirements, which have been translated into legislation with the effect of the 1st of January. Now, what am I talking about? Well, to find out, I've invited Nell Schoeman, who's a lawyer with Global Advisory and Family Office firm Maitland, to share a little bit more with the latest in the world of offshore tax and compliance structuring. Evening, Nell. It's all about substance over form, as we've got tax authorities all over the world trying to increase tax transparency. What is the background to the EU economic substance requirements?
Oh, Michael, thank you very much. Good evening to you and to everybody listening. So, indeed, as you said, the EU are the ones driving this. And I think, to put it in a nutshell, there's a perception that a lot of these low tax or zero tax jurisdictions, there's a perception that they are attracting income or generating income within themselves without really providing the substantive economic presence that justifies the retention of such income. And the obvious perceived mischief here is that people are not paying, or structures are not paying, tax in, for instance, mainland Europe, to make it more contextual here. So what they've done really is to undergo quite an extensive evaluation, following which they came up with a number of principles which they are holding up to these offshore jurisdictions and saying, look, you guys need to beef up your measures and put some formal legislation on the table to ensure and to satisfy us that these structures cannot be used for keeping disproportionate income in these low tax jurisdictions, and in so doing, basically avoiding tax in others.
And it was back in 2017 that we saw that you published that initial so-called blacklist of 17 odd countries, which at the time the EU finance ministers claimed refused to cooperate with its crackdown on these so-called tax havens, and a series of other nations were also put on a grey list. I believe Mauritius was on one of those. In broad terms, what are the substance requirements targeting as relevant activities that are actually deemed high risk from a lack of substance perspective?
Yes, so typically they've targeted activities which are geographically mobile and therefore are seen as a higher risk when it comes to abusing tax systems. So these activities are, just to mention them, are banking, insurance, fund management, finance and leasing, headquartering, shipping, distribution and service centers, IP holding companies, and then very importantly, holding companies in general. So those are the activities that they have targeted in terms of these new substance rules.
And what are the particular thresholds for deeming economic substance?
So the thresholds, basically, what they are insisting is that if you fall into one of those categories, or rather if the entity is carrying out any one of those activities, the rules would force all the income-generating activities to take place on the island. There are some mechanisms for outsourcing, but these are very limited. They also require that these activities should be directed and managed from the island, and also that there must be adequate people, premises, and expenditure to justify the income that is being retained. Mm. Uh, so, And obviously, you know, I might just say that the thresholds do vary. So when it comes to, for instance, intellectual property, they are more aggressive, seeing as intellectual property are, is considered to be the most high risk from a tax evasion point of view. And then it scales down to the sort of lesser risky, considered risky activities, which is just your holding company.
It still seems rather vague. I think the key question remains, what's adequate? Because, you know, if you look at it, how much substance does a business need to have to justify a profit of, say, $1 million to be taxed or rather not taxed in the Cayman Islands? And how much for $10 million?
That's very true. So, you know, to your first point around vagueness, we are still waiting for more detailed guidelines. So there is still some grey to be fleshed out in black and white. However, what we do know, for instance, is that they have canvassed specific, across all these jurisdictions that are affected, there seems to be agreement around what the core income generating activities are for each of these relevant high risk activities. So, for instance, if there's a banking business running on one of these islands, raising funds, for instance, managing the risks, taking hedging positions, providing loans of credit, managing capital, those are classified as core income generating activities, and immediately you will have to show the local regulator or tax authority that those are being executed on the island, or if they're outsourced, there's a lot of explaining that needs to be done. I think also, just again, on your point around vagueness, it's a very good point. But what we do know is, for instance, on say pure equity holding companies, which could affect a lot of high net worths with offshore trust and company structures, we do know that at least the threshold there will be that there is an adequate level of presence and that there are people actually on the ground in a lot of the affected jurisdictions. And even though that sounds a bit like a no-brainer, often when you look at these offshore structures, you may have an entity that's, for instance, registered in the BVI, which is a sort of a capital for company registrations, but there aren't necessarily people on the ground in the BVI because the company may be run from Guernsey, for instance. And now immediately, so what's the ultimate effect? How will this really affect individuals? Well, it may mean that there's an increased speed because they might have to, at the moment, it looks as for instance, have to appoint people in the BVI to beef up the feet on the ground, as it were. And this is where I think the thrust of the need for a review of offshore structures stems from.
And if you look at it as well, I mean, quite apart from what the future might hold for those finance centres that have committed to following the EU's economic substance rules, there doesn't appear to be an independent system to rule on whether or not those jurisdictions have actually complied. The sole arbiter here is the EU and the EU Code of Conduct Group. And if it decides that a jurisdiction isn't demonstrating sufficient commitment to economic substance in its laws, then that jurisdiction can be placed on a blacklist. I mean, it does beg all sorts of questions around how the whole thing has been structured.
No, indeed. I think you put your finger right on it. I mean, you certainly do get a feeling that, you know, it's the EU putting pressure. And I suppose, you know, there's always questions around whether that's a valid agenda or not. But I do think that, you know, I think the overarching message that one can take out of this is certainly we've seen the CRS and FATCA coming in offshore, and it's changed the entire offshore landscape so that everything is now transparent, and that's a given, which was not the case 5 or 6 years ago even. But it does seem that this might be the first drop of a bit of a flood where I do think in time to come, this may be signals that you will have to beef up offshore structures. In other words, I think the days where a lot of the standard planning was very flimsy and maybe I don't want to say low cost because, you know, cost is always a relevant thing, but I do think it signals a bit of a change in terms of what you would have to What is the minimum requirement to have an offshore structure? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, that is a good way of putting it. So it is going to require considerable more investment and effort to establish those, and ultimately that cost is going to be borne by the end user. Nels Kumman, lawyer with Global Advisory for Maitland. Let's find out how bad the load shedding induced traffic chaos is with Pusuletso.